thank you for being here. It's my great honor and fortune to be with all of you today. Special gratitude to Sridharji, who gives so much of his heart and life's energies to open the doors to Bhakti Fest for all of you. And to each and every one of you for being here. When we chant these mantras, divine sound vibrations, they tune us into particular frequencies that permeate all of creation. The concept of satsang, associating with enlightening people, is based on this idea that what we associate with, we become very influenced and affected by that. The Bhagavad Gita tells us that there are three gunas, or modes of nature. Sattva guna, Raja guna, Tama guna. These three gunas are within the cosmic manifestation, within and outside everything and everyone. They're within the molecular particles. They're within the solar system, planetary systems. Goodness, passion, ignorance. And just like the basic colors, there's three basic colors, and when we combine them, they can become so many colors. So similarly, as these three modes combine with one another in various ways, they can create and inspire limitless variegatedness. Not only within people's personalities and how things are moving, but especially our own consciousness. So when we tune in to the frequency of goodness, we very much become affected by that. When we tune into the frequency of passion or ignorance, we become very much affected by that. So much of our lives on every level are dependent on which particular frequencies we are tuned into. Just like on a television. When I was young, there were four stations where I lived. And you had to get up from your bed, walk across the room, and turn a dial. And then every time you turn the dial, you'd have to adjust the antenna in order to get a good reception. But now people just lay in their beds and press buttons, and there's 100, 200 stations. It's quite incredible. But how does that actually work? It's not that you send a message from New York to Hollywood saying, I want this station, please send it to me as soon as possible. Even a little child who doesn't know anything about anything just presses a button, and there's the station. That means those waves, those electrical, magnetic, or whatever they are, waves, those frequencies, are everywhere. And what you tune into is what you're going to access. So within this world, each of us is like a little antenna. What we absorb, what we tune into, is what we're going to transmit. If we tune into greed, then we're going to transmit greed. And our greed is going to connect to the overall universal frequency of greed. So when someone tunes into that frequency, they're actually tuning into everyone's greed in the universe. Does that sound nice? And naturally, we're affected. And then there's, you know, selfish lust. When we tune into that frequency, it's very, very powerful. It can really affect us. And then we start affecting everyone else. If we tune into compassion, goodness, charity, then we're going to be affected. And we tune in by the choices we make of who we're going to be with, what we're going to see, what we're going to hear, what we're going to meditate upon. But just as there are limitless material frequencies, there are also various levels of spiritual frequencies. And there are very subtle material frequencies that are sometimes considered to be spiritual. The Vedic literatures, they can fulfill, or they can teach us how to fulfill so many different kinds of desires. This teaches how to do it. Just like we find within the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, the Srimad Bhagavata, the Puranas, and so many other scriptures. There are great yogis. Their intent was to tune into particular types of frequencies. Just like Ravana, Hiranyakasipu, Buddha Gosura, there's descriptions of dozens, hundreds, and thousands of really evil people who had the most incredible supernatural powers through yoga practice. They could tune into frequencies where they could manipulate the subtle aspects of creation. Now, in today's world, where very, very few people know how to do that, it's considered supernatural. But it's only supernatural if you don't know how to do it. When I was a little boy in the 1950s, if someone had a cell phone and was talking to somebody in India, everyone would think they were supernatural. Yes? And today we don't even know how it's done, but still it's normal, so we don't really think it's much of anything. In fact, it's a disturbance for many. So just as for a little person like me, when I have to do something on a computer, if something goes wrong, I don't know what to do. But in India, if you call an 8-year-old child, they can immediately fix it. So it's kind of like a supernatural power. How did you do that? Because he knows how to do it. See, the subtler we understand the energies of creation, the more power we discover. At one time, people used to fight in a very gross physical way. fight with their fists. And they fought with clubs. And then bows and arrows. And then through sophistication, nuclear bombs is really just discovering. They're not creating it. They're just learning. They discovered this incredible power within the atoms and within the subtle, within this matter, and how to unleash it, how to activate it. Such a power and such a bond. Well, subtler than even the atomic particles is the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. And what the mystical science of yoga teaches us is how to actually tap in to the subtlemost aspects of material creation. The mind, intelligence, and ego. And when we learn to actually connect there, we can manipulate gross matter from a subtler, more powerful way. People like Ravana, if you read about her, it sounds inconceivable and unbelievable, some type of mythology or fairy tales, but if you understand how yoga works, it's just common sense to believe it. He was such a warrior that he could manipulate matter by chanting mantras where he could, when he would fight, he could assume 20 arms and 10 heads. And he was really scary too. And there's beautiful stories, I'll tell some of them in the future days, where warriors cut off all 10 of his arms and all 10 of his heads, and instantly, the Oguga, and he was smiling. My little children think, oh, that's really scary. But it's even scarier if you understand what he could do. Through the 8 mystic cities, we could dematerialize our body just through sound vibration, because nada brahman. Everything within creation, according to the Vedic science, is built upon sound. Even in the Bible, it is said, in the beginning, there was the word. So through sound frequencies, whether they're silent in our minds or whether they're spoken softly or loudly, we could actually connect to incredible different types of powers. Could dematerialize bodies and then rematerialize them anywhere we want. How many would like to be able to do that? Could fly. Now, how could a human fly? We think it's impossible. But birds fly. It's very easy for them. And rocket ships fly. It's natural because their species is tuned into that frequency of flying. It's like those little, when I was a little boy, we had dog whistles. They still have those. Where the theory is you're not supposed to hear it, but your dog could hear it because it's so high. So dogs are tuned into a higher frequency than what we could hear. And little flies with their multifaceted eyes, they see different than what we see because of the way we're tuned in. So through yoga, we could learn. It's a science. We could learn to read other people's minds. We could learn prakriti, anything, anywhere in the world, we can dematerialize it and then materialize it where we are. You want a mango from Kabul, Afghanistan, you just chant the mantra and it can come. Now, people who don't know how to do it think, oh, that's impossible, or that's unbelievable. But if you know how to do it, or if you've seen people who do it, you think, so what? It's just you know how to do it. As far as levitation, as far as controlling other people's minds and lives, I knew a yogi who actually, I saw him, I lived with him. He could get all nourishment from the air. He didn't eat or drink anything. He just breathed. And the amazing thing, he wasn't even thin. He would just like go into meditation and just start getting nutrients from air. Now for you and me, you know, we'd get really thin. Eventually we'd get pretty weak. And I saw him, we were walking down a path one day and there was a gigantic rock and he just moved it effortlessly. And I asked him, how did you do that? And he just smiled. He said, you just don't know how to do it. It's just tuning into a higher power. So these powers are there. But with this particular person, he was so arrogant, and he was never peaceful. He was actually a very, very unhappy person. He just happened to know all these powers from lifetimes of yoga practice. So through yoga, if we want a strong, healthy, beautiful body, it's very possible. If we want a really clear, peaceful mind, it's possible. If we want these powers where we can influence others, where we can do miracles, where we can move things across just by mind over matter, moving things across the room. Actually, when I first saw these things, when I lived with yogis, I was really kind of mesmerized. But after a while, it was like, the only thing that impressed me was good character, which is really rare for anyone in this world. Love, compassion. So different types of yogic practice and different type of mantras connect us to different material or spiritual frequencies. And if we practice sincerely, then we can actually make that access. And what we invest our time and our desires into, eventually we're going to get it. And there's different levels of spiritual freedom. We are only talking right now of material things. The Asta cities, the eight cities of these are all on a very subtle, deep material level. But transcendentalists are those who actually give up all desire for enjoyment and control of material energy and actually tap into that state, which is the nature of the soul. And then there is the frequency of Brahman, the all-pervading, omnipresent, supreme aspect of God. To actually connect to that aham brahmasmi. I'm not this body, I'm spirit. I'm actually non-different than that all-pervading spirit of Brahman or God, different names. And in that that state of consciousness, we tap into the sat feature of the absolute truth, the eternal, all-knowing, omnipresent existence of truth. And on the path of bhakti, and there are many schools of bhakti, and over the, since the beginning of time, there has been great acharyas, or teachers, on the path of bhakti. Brahma, Lakshmi, the four Kumaras, Rudra, Shiva, Nimbarka, Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu Swami, Bhavacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These are all various great, great proponents of bhakti. And what the bhakti tradition teaches is it's the yoga that connects us with the frequency of grace. That frequency of grace is the compassionate nature of the Supreme Person, the Supreme God of Bhagavan, who has come to this world in many forms with many names. And the goal is to awaken the dormant potential of love praying within us. Satchit Ananda. And that praying is declared within the Vedic scriptures to be the highest level of happiness. But then, subjectively, whatever you're really seeking in life, you're going to consider that the highest. For Ravana, he spent thousands of years and lifetimes performing meditation and tapasya to get the powers he had, because he considered it the highest happiness. But those who are seeking, praying, pure, unmotivated, unconditional love, which the Vedas declare to be the original, fullest realization of our spiritual nature, of the Atma, the soul. So this chanting of these beautiful mantras, Hare Krishna mantra, and other various such mantras, they tune us into that grace. And there's a beautiful explanation. The full moon, when it spreads its rays, and those rays touch the blue lotus blossoms. It won't blossom through any type of sunshine. If you try to open it up, you'll just rip it apart. The blue lotus is considered in the poetry of India to be the most beautiful manifestation in creation. But it only opens up when it's touched by the rays of the full moon. So similarly, when the soothing rays of grace, Sri Radha, is the personification of that grace, the feminine aspect of the Supreme. When we are touched by that grace, then the lotus of the heart blossoms and manifests its full potential. And the fragrance of the blue lotus fills all directions with nectar. And similarly, when our heart opens, the fragrance of compassion. Compassion to all beings, which is the natural expression of prema or love. It spreads everywhere, unconditionally, to everyone. And this is goal of bhakti yoga, to connect to that grace so that our hearts open and our love fully blossoms. In this regard, I'd like to tell a simple story. I'll tell a couple stories. About 500 years ago, Krishna, or Bhagavan, appeared as Sri Chaitanya. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little boy, he was known by the name Nimai, because he was born under a neem tree. At that time, he concealed his supreme divinity and behaved just like a child in the village of Navadvip. And people loved him, but they didn't know who he really was. They just thought he was Nimai. And sometimes he was very naughty. But when he was in his student times, he would go each day to visit a very simple man named Sridhar, just like you. Actually, seeing you inspired me to tell this story. His name was Kolavecha Sridhar. Kolavecha means one who sells bananas. He was a very simple man. He rarely even had bananas. He mostly had banana leaves. And he just sat in a little dusty road on the side and had a little piece of cloth. And on it, whatever he could get, he would sell. He'd had banana leaves. And sometimes he had some banana flowers or banana roots or banana bark. And sometimes bananas. And he was such a simple man. He did business in a way that's quite incomprehensible for Americans. He especially charged the least amount he could and survive, because he didn't want to inconvenience anyone. And he was so honest. And whatever money he made, he would take half of it and go to the river Ganges and worship Mother Ganga, knowing that she is a manifestation of Sri Radha and Krishna's grace, who's come to this world to free people of sins and deliver love of God. So he felt so indebted and so devoted. He gave half of his income to worshiping the Lord. And whatever little he had left, he survived. And he lived very simple. Nimai would come. Beautiful little boy. And Sridhar was so attracted, because Sridhar was a great devotee of Krishna. He didn't recognize this. This was his Krishna. But he loved him just like Krishna. Nimai would say, "How much is your bananas?" And he would quote the most fair price in all of Navadvip. And Nimai would say, "I will give you half." And they would have an argument. And eventually Nimai would say, "I will just take them and give you nothing." Sridhar would say, "Take them." In this way, Krishna himself, in the form of Nimai, would come and spend minimum 3 hours every day arguing the price of bananas with Sridhar. It's kind of the way Sridhar does bhakti festivals. And when Nimai would be coming late, Sridhar would just be looking down the road, waiting for him, his heart immersed in deep separation. When will he come? He was just looking at the horizon, waiting for that little form of Nimai to come down the road. And if Nimai was late, his heart would be just beating in separation. A moment was like years. And when Nimai would come and smile, such happiness. And then they'd argue the price of bananas. And one day Nimai told Sridhar that, why are you a devotee of Krishna? What is he doing for you? There are atheists. And there are people who worship all kinds of material religious ways all around you, and they have lots of money, and they have beautiful houses, and they have nice dresses and good food. And look at you. You're so skinny because you hardly eat. And your clothes, you have one set of clothes, and there are so many holes in the clothes. And Sridhar didn't have money for needle and thread. He would take the two sides of the holes in the tears in his clothes and just tie a knot. Nimai say, I see at least 12 knots in your clothes. And your house, it's just a one-room little thatched hut with no furniture. It has a straw roof. And when it rains, the rain comes in. What is Krishna doing for you? Sridhar smiled. He said, in my life, I have seen there is a king. The king lives in a beautiful palace, has the finest clothes, eats the best foods. And then there's a bird. The bird lives in a little nest of grass and straw, wears the same feathers every day, and just eats little berries. But as far as I could see, they spend their time the same way. I really don't see a difference. Both the king and the bird are just looking for happiness, trying to avoid distress, and both are finding happiness, and both are finding distress. So I'm happy. Krishna's giving me everything I need and everything I want. I'm just happy chanting his names. And Nimai said, you are a cheater. He was very grave. Sridhar said, what do you mean? He says, you're a hypocrite. You actually have such great wealth. You have a treasure. You're hiding it and pretending to be poor. Sridhar said, no, no, whatever you see is what I am. There's nothing else. And Nimai said, someday I am going to expose you to everyone. And then he said, I'm going to take your bananas. And Sridhar said, don't, please, don't do this to me. Just take my bananas. And every day, every time a little squash would grow from his roof, Sridhar would send it to Nimai's mother, Sachi, to cook for him. Years later, Nimai became Lord Chaitanya, or Lord Gauranga, and he actually established this kirtan movement like never before in the world's history. That's a beautiful, beautiful story in that regard. And to many of his loving associates, he revealed his form of God. to Murari Gupta, who was a great devotee of Lord Ram, he revealed his form of Sri Ram. To others, he revealed his form of Varaha, Narasimha, Krishna. One day, or one night actually, he was fulfilling any desire his devotees had. He would ask them, ask for anything I will give you. And he could actually give it. And as he was doing this, he said, where is Sridhar? Please get him. And nobody even knew who Sridhar was because he was such a simple, humble person. He said, just go. It's night. Just go in this direction towards Simantadweep along the banks of the Ganges. And you'll hear somebody chanting Krishna's names very loud. You'll hear him chanting Hari Hari. And bring him here. Now Sridhar was so simple. Throughout the night he used to love to chant Hari Hari. And sometimes his neighbors became disturbed with him. They said, we need to sleep so that we can make money. And you don't have any money, that's why you're just chanting all night. You're such a lazy person, you don't even care. They would spread all kinds of bad rumors against him. They would say, the reason he's chanting all night is because he's so hungry, it's the pains, he's just crying out, Hadi, Hadi. So sometimes they would just take a vegetable and throw them at him and say, shut up, eat this. He would just chant, Hadi, Hadi. He was very happy. So the devotees went there and they heard him and they found him and they said, Lord Chaitanya wants to meet you. And Sridhar now knew that he was his beloved Lord, Krishna. And he said, why does he want to meet me? And they brought him. And Sri Chaitanya, he said to Sridhar, he revealed to him his form of Krishna in Vrindavan. And said, I will fulfill any desire you have. Ask for anything and I will give it to you. Sridhar said, I don't want anything. I'm just happy to be the servant of the servant of your servants. I'm just happy to see you. I don't want anything. Lord Chaitanya said, but I want to give you something. You're so poor. I will give you fabulous wealth. I'll give you palaces and property like a king. Just ask. Sridhar said, I don't want that. He said, then ask for, I'll give you all the 8 mystical cities, all the yogic powers in full. You'll be able to make yourself invisible. You'll be able to, just by chanting mantras, travel to other planets. What to speak of this planet? You'll be able to achieve and attain anything you want. I'll give you all the mystic potencies. Ask! How many of you would like those benedictions? Sridhar looked down and said, my Lord, having those powers will only be a disturbance to me. I don't want them. Then I'll give you liberation. No more suffering ever. Sridhar said, I don't want that. I'll give you elevation to the spiritual world, the highest liberation. Ask. Sridhar said, please don't be disturbed. I don't want anything. Lord Chaitanya became very intense. He said, ask for something. He said, my only desire is to please you. Lord Chaitanya said, well, I will be pleased if you ask for something. He said, if it pleases you that I ask for something, then I ask for only this. Let that little boy, Nimai, forever be living in my heart. Let me always remember how you would come to steal my bananas. That is my only desire, my Lord. Birth after birth after birth, wherever I may be, please come in that form of Nimai to steal my bananas. Sri Chaitanya began to cry. And all these great mahants and mahatmas and acharyas and avatars, all these great people who were assembled, they all began to cry. Nimai fulfilled his promise. He exposed the true treasure of wealth that Sridhar kept concealed within his own heart. The wealth of unconditional love. The happiness of that love. Love for Krishna. Feeling Krishna's infinite love for ourselves. Being an instrument of that love in whatever we do. The happiness of that is transcendent and beyond all the dualities and changes of this world. Pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor, happiness, distress, success, failure, victory, defeat, health, disease, birth, death. These dualities are inevitable, whoever we are, wherever we live, whatever we have. But the Bhagavad Gita tells that true wealth is within our own hearts. The nature of the soul. For the soul to receive the infinite love, the sweet love of the Supreme, and to love. That reciprocation. There is a beautiful poem in Vrindavan that when a lady loves a man and puts perfume on for the pleasure of her beloved, that wherever she goes on her way to beloved, everyone enjoys the perfume. So in the same way, when we have love for Krishna, then that love is naturally extends to everyone, everywhere. Now I'll tell one simple story that I actually wrote in the book I wrote, The Journey Home, that depicts this principle. When I was living in Vrindavan, this was in 1971, every day I would go to many very ancient established temples and ashrams and meet different Babas and sages. But I would go, I think around 10 o'clock every day, to one very simple, humble man that only a few people in the whole planet knew. His name was Ghanashyam. Have anyone read that story? He lived in a little hallway of somebody else's house in front of a closet. It was just a small closet. And in the closet, 50 years before, he had discovered in the ground beautiful forms of Radha Krishna. The name of Krishna is Gopi Jana Balabha, the beloved of gopis. And he found them in the ground. He was a musician for a king at one time, And when he went to Vrindavan, he became so enchanted by the environment, he just stayed there. And he had nothing. He was homeless, living on the ground, under trees. And then he found these beautiful forms of Krishna. And he didn't know what to do with them, so he just sat under a tree with them. And sometime later, a family felt sorry for him and said, you can put them in our closet in our house, and you could stay in the hallway. And he was there for over 50 years when I met him. And he never left. He was so happy. He would just be alone with Krishna and Radha. And he would sing for them, and he would offer things to them, and he would just care for them. It was so simple. But his simplicity had a deep effect in my heart. Because he simply loved God. And I became so inspired, and I felt so empowered when I was with him. And every day when I'd come, he would give me 3 rotis. Now, these are called braja rotis. A roti is a piece of bread. It's in Vrindavan, the wheat grows, and the Brijavasis, the simple village people, they harvest the wheat, and then they have these stones that they turn, and it grinds the wheat, and it becomes a really coarse flour, and they add some water from the river Yamuna in it, and then they make it into a paddy and put it on a little fire pan, and then they put it right on the fire, and it's a flat piece of bread. It's called roti. Every day he would give me 3 rotis. Nothing with it, just dry. But it was so nice. You had to taste it with your heart. You couldn't taste it with your tongue. Then it was really nice. So that went on for some time. But one day, I was living on the bank of the river, and I had just taken my bath in the morning in the Yamuna River. I was coming out, and one sadhu, a holy man, every day he would walk by around that time, and he'd always give me some blessing. But on this day, he chastised me. He said, you are so selfish. Shame on you. And I said, I know I'm selfish, but why are you saying this today? He said, because of you, Ganesham is starving. I said, what do you mean? He said, he never leaves that closet. And somebody brings him 3 rotis every day. He offers them on his altar. And that's the only thing for him to eat. And you're eating them every day. He hasn't eaten anything in days because of you, shameless one. I said, I didn't know. He said, shame on you, and walked away. So I went back to Ganeshan's temple a little later that day. Came with his leaf plate and 3 rotis and put it in front of me, sitting on the floor. And I said, I'm not hungry. He said, no, no, you must eat. I said, but I'm not hungry. He said, but you're young, you don't have to be hungry. You can eat. This is Krishna's food, it's for you. And I said, no, no, I'm not going to eat. He said, why are you not going to eat? And he started to cry. He said, it is because of my sins that you will not eat my rotis? I said, Ganesham, you're starving because of me. He said, who told you this? I said, I was told that you don't eat anything except these 3 rotis. You don't have anything else, and I'm eating them every day. He said, I have so many rotis. I said, show me your rotis. He said, no need, no need. I said, then I'm not going to eat these. He said, no, you must eat them. I said, show me your rotis. No need, no need. I said, well, where are they? He said, they're in that closet. There was another little closet that was next to his closet. It's where the family kept their brooms and all of that stuff. So I went in and I looked around. I said, there's no rotis here, Ganesha. He said, no need, eat it. And I refused. And then with folded palms, really from his heart, he spoke like a father, like a mother, like a friend. He said, the only thing I have in my life is my service. Whoever comes into this house is Gopijana Ballappa's friend. I'm just his servant. My only happiness is in serving Krishna's friends. You're his friend. You came here. So you must eat these. It's the only happiness I have. It's my life. If you don't eat these rotis, I have nothing to live for. They started to cry. You know what I did? I ate all the rotis. And he was so happy. But then I made a plan, a strategic plan. I decided tomorrow I'm coming 2 hours later. By that time, definitely he'll eat the rotis. So when I came in the door of these people's house, he's just, you know, it's just like kind of an old living room of a house with a closet, and he would just like be in the living room, in the little hallway. And as soon as I walked in, he rejoiced. In those days, in Vrindavan, people called me Krishna Das. He said, Krishna Das, Krishna Das, you have come. Gopijana Ballappa has been waiting for you. He wouldn't eat without his friend. And I looked, and the rotis were still on the altar. And then he gave them to me. And for his pleasure, I ate them. So this was becoming really complicated for me. If I didn't eat them, I would kill him. And if I did eat them, I would kill them. So what would you do? So I used my... I prayed. Because I really loved to be with him. He was teaching me so many beautiful lessons through his life. So I would go out and beg for rotis and bring them and put them on his altar. And then I would eat his and he would eat mine. Something like that. It was genuine, and there were many, many stories like this. His joy was to serve. His joy was to give. He wanted nothing else. And he was truly blissful. A simple man who simply loved God. And I remember some months later, Srila Prabhupada came to Vrindavan with our Shamsundar Prabhu. Shamsundar here was Prabhupada's personal secretary at that time. And he was telling me so many beautiful things about the love and compassion of Prabhupada. And it was so special. I was sitting with him one day. There was just about 6 or 7 people in the room. One man, I think he was a journalist, he said, you left Vrindavan in 1965 with nothing. And now you have so many temples all over the world, and you have so many disciples all over the world. Are you the guru of the whole world? Prabhupada just looked down. He was sitting on the floor. And tears were in his eyes. And he said, "No. I'm just the servant of everyone. That's all." Those words penetrated my heart so deeply. And in Ghanashyam, and in these, in Prabhupada, I remember thinking that I had lived with great, great yogis who really had tremendous supernatural powers and unbelievable intellect. But these people, they simply want to serve with love. And that's what bhakti is. That simple desire to serve with love. And this chanting of the Maha Mantra, the holy names of God, is a special way of tuning into the frequency of grace that awakens that love from within us. So we have 5 minutes. Shall we have kirtan? Thank you very much. Chanting, please hold your hands like this. Welcome. As you are chanting.